So first I would like to thank Eberhard, Bob, Valentin, and Alain for inviting me here, and I enjoyed the pasta the previous time, and I even more what? Emilia now. Okay, and Emilia I enjoyed even more this time. So today I won't speak about sudden cardiac death channels, and I won't speak about sudden cardiac death genes. So I'll speak won't speak about mechanism of fibrillation and cardiac arrhythmias. I mostly will speak about technology. We spoke a little bit with Alain, so what to put in, and then I realized that if I'll try to do it, so we will have not an hour, 1 hour talk, but maybe 3 hours talk. So I spared you aggravation. So let's start. The first thing, why 3D is important in the heart? So because many of you know Winfrey's paper in Science some time ago, where he discussed whether it's enough elbow space, whether it's anyway in the inside the myocardial wall, whether it's enough room for anything three-dimensional happen. And so I will start my movies with some old experiments that I always show to show that indeed 3D is important. So this is the experimental setup. It's an isolated coronary perfused ventricular wall. We can take left wall, left ventricle, right one ventricle, cannulate through the major coronary artery, and then stretch it on the frame, and then you can stain it with voltage-sensitive dye, and you can look at it from both sides simultaneously with two CCD video cameras. This is the experimental setup. And then you can initiate in this slab arrhythmias and see what happens. And now I'll show you one of the examples. Can we turn the lights down? Is the other way? Down. Okay, this doesn't go well. Okay, perfect. Perfect. So what you will see now, I think he did something. Oops. I knew that we shouldn't have done this. Oops. Where is my mouse? Okay. What you see now, you see simultaneous recordings of two myocardial surfaces. On one surface you see very nice, stably rotating spiral wave, and the other surface you see very complex pattern that if you look from here you would never know from endocardium that you ever had a reentry here, although the rhythm is periodic. So that shows that something is happening inside, that that's indeed the thickness of the myocardial wall plays a role. So this is what we believe is happening, but it's not that simple because this is L-shaped filament. Then on one surface you see a spiral, on the other surface we will see breakthroughs. But this thing shouldn't be stable, because it should collapse due to positive tension, but it doesn't. Apparently the both ends are pinned. So this is what we tend to think about this experiment. But all these experiments, let me show another example. This is not working. This is not working. Okay, I'll skip this. So now the question is how to study the three-dimensional organization inside the myocardial wall. So can you actually learn anything about it. So these are schematically show various imaging methods that you can use for this purpose. And from the very beginning, I would like to say that standard confocal techniques are not good for this. Confocal methods, two-photon nonlinear methods, they can go no more than 200-300 microns from the surface. And myocardial wall is about centimeter. So this is an order of magnitude thicker, and the beam, actually, if you direct the laser beam towards the heart, so it will forget the initial direction, 100-200 microns away from the surface, it will become a diffuse point source. So this is, so you cannot do this. So the only approach is diffusive optical tomography. So this is schematically, we show the standard imaging. When you have a slab or surface of the heart, you illuminate, then focus on the surface, which is equivalent place detector on the surface, and then record from here. So there is also another approach is how you can do this. One is you can shine the light on one side and record signal on the other side. It's called transillumination. That's broad field transillumination. And then there is a more fancy technique when you scan with a laser and detector simultaneously. It's called coaxial scanning technique. With this method, you can get better resolution than with this one, but this method much slower. So we started. Yes.
For the left side, you would use a photosensitive light, for example, and on the other two, you would use some other dye.
For this, you can also use voltage sensitive dye. For this too?
Yes.
Also, we use also voltage-sensitive dye, but there are two dyes you can use, absorptive and fluorescent. And the results, and you should treat these methods quite differently, depending on what kind of dye you use. I'll get back to this a little bit. So you can do. So what we did, nobody actually, this diffusive optical tomography is a huge field. People work there for years already, but nobody has tried to do it with voltage sensitive dye. So with voltage sensitive or calcium sensitive, they do only microscopy, but that's a completely different story, because it for us it's not
the absorption length of the light that you send in.
So there are different, we use various types of, the newer dyes, we haven't measured yet the attenuation depth, because that's so new, but for older ones, it's about 1.5 millimeter. But actually, there is no one lens, there are two lenses. One for excitation, you excite with a green light, for example, so it has a shorter attenuation length, and then it emits with a longer wavelength in the red range, it has a different, and this difference actually is important, and it determines what you see.
But if this thing is 1 centimeter thick, then you have a certain length of,
very good. So absorption lens, you have, let's say, a millimeter or two, you would think that you would see nothing. But this is not the case. And I'm going to convince you that this is not the case. So, so it's very good that you're interested, because we have to make a step back. In a way, we did the measurements and look whether we can see the signal, and then when we realized that we can get the signal, so we made a step back trying to understand what we see. So what we created is, we call it a hybrid model. It's first you to study distribution of photons, you use it's a photon diffusion theory. You use standard diffusion equations, actually. But diffusion here, it's not. Get used to this equation. Now this will be the diffusion of photons. This is absorption coefficient, and Q is the source distribution. So, and this is here the time dependence. You can neglect time dependence because photons equilibrate quite rapidly compared to electrical potential. And so then you do what you do, then this is the voltage is sitting here. So what you do, then you So this is how you couple this optical diffusion equation to our standard ionic model. So this is the source term, and so this is the factor that describes the dye. This is membrane distribution as a function, three-dimensional function. And this is another important factor that I didn't speak about. So you also have to take into account the distribution of light. This is what Eberhard mentioned in the tissue. So you have to solve this equation twice. First for the to find the light distribution, and then then you calculate for fluorescence, for example. No, it's isotropic. This is surprising. we did measure D, and D is isotropic. Isotropic, despite all these fibers in terms of scattering, it seems to be isotropic. This is.
Can you understand the second equation? Phi effective, or what is the substrate compared to the other?
Excitation. E, it's not effective, excitation. Light. Or the illumination, I don't know.
One function, right? That's.
It depends on how you illuminate. If you go with the laser, you have one distribution. If you because you have two weights, one.
You need another equation.
Yes, you need the equation will be different because A will be different absorption coefficient because the wavelength is different, and you also boundary conditions will be different. If you go, for example, with point illumination for scanning, you have to do it differently.
Phi is how you illuminate. What is phi then, without the intensity?
Phi is just the way. Maybe it's this is for photon density.
Just think about it. These are the different frequencies, right?
The two differences. I just for simplicity. You see, I prepared this slide for people who would never ask me this kind of questions. So I apologize.
Phi E would be in the green, for example, and you know.
Well, yeah. Okay, so. Okay, we are on the same way. Because I showed this, just blinked the slide, that there are some equations, but I didn't go into this, but probably I have to prepare another version.
The redshift is the source for the green. No, you said
fluorescent dyes have you excite this dye in order to fluoresce. You have to illuminate this dye, for example, with green light, and so the green light has its own diffusion in the tissue. So you solve for that first. So then you find the distribution of light in the tissue. Now you convolve it with with voltage distribution, and now then you do it, and then you solve this equation with this complex distribution of sources.
So my excitation is not part of the solution,
that's separate. No, it's separate. It's separate. That's why we put it aside. So now you have a model that you can actually virtual optical mapping. What we successfully happily were doing, because this was interesting too, to play a little bit with this. Now this all this point spread function, you don't want to look at this. So we initially used this ugly function, but then one physicist came and said, why are you doing such an ugly function? Why don't you use a method of images? And he got much nicer expression, analytical, using method of images. And so we use this. So now a couple of things. That actually in our field in optical mapping was a long, long struggle. What we are recording with conventional surface mapping. Guy, regret that Guy is not here today. So we have this argument for a very long time whether we record from the very surface. And this is what, let's say, if you look at single membrane, this is what you see. Membrane potential, delta F over F, changes in fluorescence proportional to the membrane potential. But what we were claiming, this is what we are seeing. And for a long time, actually, that was a purely theoretical discussion because all sensors were slow and resolution was, Rosenbaum was measuring with photodiode array that have huge pixels, 16 by 16. Then we had video cameras that have wonderful resolution, but were slow. They couldn't go more than 250 frames per second. So the question was, So that was not a big an issue. And when finally, when the new cameras that can go up to 1,000 frames per second, 2,000 frames per second, and then provide good resolution, we'll start seeing that the optical potential doesn't look right. And then immediately it was put under the rug, and nobody would discuss this. But action potential would have duration like upstroke, would have duration about 10 milliseconds. Electrophysiologists actually know that it can be, it shouldn't be. The real electrical potential actually is much shorter. This is electrical. This here we're comparing electrical and optical action potential. And then, so this is with a lot of trouble we published this paper in Biophysical Journal. And when we were doing this modeling, we just stumbled into quite interesting fact that the shape of the optical upstroke depends on the direction of propagation. So if you have a wave moving away from the surface, it has its sharpest, its steepest slope, very low, near the foot of the action potential. If it approaches the surface from inside, it has its steepest slope right near the top of the action potential. So it was very funny, and we decided to check this. But the question is how to do it, because one thing in the model you can change the orientation, and the real world you don't have that much control over the wavefront orientation. And nature helped us to test this, and what helped us was the rotational anisotropy. This is the real heart, and then you can see fiber organization. This is from classical paper by Torin Guasp. So he did it the old way. He cooked the heart and then stripped the fibers, but now fancy people do it with diffusion tensor MRI. You can get the same. But what you I wanted to show here is that here you see the fibers, and as you go deeper, the fiber orientation dramatically changes. So there is a fiber rotation with depth. So then,
okay, so if you solve your equation for the light intensity, you know, even as a source of the model, you get what you measure.
Yes, and then I'm going to show it. Yes, I'm going there, maybe too slowly, then I should move faster. So this is a computer simulation. This is, Keener showed this some time ago. This is how the, this is what should happen according to the theory when you stimulate the epicardial surface. So initially, because this anisotropic, this is the way the orientation of myocardial fibers on the surface, so the wave propagates very rapidly on the surface in this direction. But what happens as the wave moves deeper? As the wave moves deeper, eventually it reaches the layer when the fiber orientation is not like this, but perpendicular. So in this layer, the wave will accelerate, and this will result in reorientation of excitation front, changing the angle. So actually, by looking at upstrokes along this line in transverse direction, we can see the whole range of wavefront orientation. And then we can look at upstroke and see whether they follow what the model predicts or they don't.
It's,
no, this we just simulated the surface.
Do you have a fiber change within 2 millimeters?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
To cause that much of a change in the wavefront?
Yes. This is you have this, and I'll show you now experiment that actually shows that near the surface, especially in the right ventricle, the rotation is very fast. And in the left, it's a little bit slower, but in the right ventricle.
Probably just for completeness.
Yeah.
Which model has been used?
Here, that was my impression that here we use this Luo-Rudy one, if I remember it correctly. But here we actually okay. So let's move. So this is the simulated angle as a function of space. So and this is the what we call V of star map. I didn't explain that. V of star, it's the level, relative level, where the maximum is reached. So if this the maximum slope is reached near the food, then we have start small. If it's way up, it's big. So, and here actually we show this upstrokes for various location, and this is the complete map, and then you can see this simulated. This is, you can see very linear correlation between the angle of the front and the VF star. And so this, we have something then that we can test experimentally. And this is, hooray, it works quite nicely. This is the guinea pig heart, but we did it in different species. Here the standard isochronal map with 1 millisecond. So this is the surface fiber orientation. And this is a VF star map. This is the scale shows. This is, let's say, dark blue is the front moving away from the surface, and orange and yellow and green, this is moving. Green is more, let's say, neutral, sigmoidal shape, and this is moving towards the surface, like. And you can see exactly what the theory predicts. Very long fibers. We have this fronts moving away from the surface, and we see reorientation of the fronts when we move across fibers. That was quite unexpected, but this is this good news. Actually, rarely the theoreticians have good news, because usually whatever we test experimentally, it usually most of the time doesn't work. But this but this result actually was we believe so robust that even heterogeneity, we had this argument with Natalia Trajanova, that she said the heterogeneity will kill this effect. Actually, we didn't do anything. We just yeah. Yes.
But it means that you are absorbing only the surface, not the.
Yeah, we are integrating from a layer about 1.2 millimeters.
Okay.
And this changes. But in this thin layer, we actually see changes in orientation predicted by the theory. This is what Penny asked this question. So, in the model, we should just simulate a very thin layer because we don't see deeper. This is not the activation sequence. This is upstrokes map.
Okay, right.
The activation sequence is this.
Yeah.
And you understand this.
Yeah.
And this is map upstrokes. Let me show you again. What this means is, so for each point in space, we show this value VF star map, where the maximal upstroke is where the upstroke reaches its maximal slope. So, and we can actually map. For example, here it's very low value. At the periphery, it's a very
what is
high.
What is time?
0.7. No, this is a fractional value. Let's say if the amplitude is 1, it's 70%. Yeah, this is 10%. So that's what we do. We map the whole map upstrokes. Computers now work fast.
That if you're up at 0.7, that means the wavefront is coming up towards you.
Yeah, but it is. You see, it's directed towards you.
Yeah, so if you go up to your guinea pig, then it looks like the wavefront goes into the heart and then comes back out on the sides?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, this, look at this picture. This is exactly what it shows. So you see here the average angle is directed from away from the surface. Of course, on the surface it's perpendicular, but then it's curves in. So here you see, like in along the long axis, you will see rapid propagation. So the front always ahead of the deeper layers. But in transverse direction, it's quite an interesting effect that deeper layers are ahead of the surface layers. Because in surface layers, it's propagation across fibers, and in deeper layers, it's along fibers. So the front, the leading edge is formed deep in the heart, and it makes, here you will see in a way, phase velocity, like the wave moving at an angle towards the surface.
Where did you change the orientation of the fibers in that 2 millimeters?
It's a linear rotation. It's a linear rotation. It's not abrupt.
Instead of going, when I measure transverse propagation, in the 2 millimeters below the surface is really not pure
transverse. Yeah. So no, in this direction, in transmural direction, it will be pure transverse. But let's assume you initiate a plane wave perpendicular to fibers. So I wish I had this slide shown.
I can
show a picture.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
But you don't measure in metrical, right?
Well, I measure in the vortices.
Yeah. Okay, that's okay, we'll discuss that. So
actually, I have a really quick, so you know, you and I have discussed the sharpness of the upstroke.
Yeah.
That's important for knowing where we are in parameter space. So there, it seems that to get good validation of a good agreement in theory experiment, you need a fast upstroke in the source. Right? So optically it looks like this, but yet the DVDT is fast.
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
You showed the single cell upstroke, right? Which
yes.
is embedded to the very fast upstroke.
Yes.
Right? So that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
You know, it's,
but this is what everyone stumbled. It was a big discussion. How much? That's what actually very good for imagers.
But it shows that a single cell is still a fast upstroke.
Yes, it's still fast upstroke.
Right?
Yeah, so at the end of the.
Agree on this
now? Yeah. So single cell, there is no problem with a single cell because. Yeah.
But can you explain to me again why I see this? I see the waveform. I understand. Okay, but why do I see the signature of the action potentials like this, and why?
Why? Okay. So we can make a short break. But maybe when I don't need the picture. Let's assume that you are looking from the surface and the wave moving towards you. So because you are illuminating, although weight of the wave far away, but because nothing else is present, you start picking signal long before the wave reaches the surface. And as you will come closer, so it's a double effect. A, the wave gets closer, your weight will shoot up of contribution to your optical signal will increase, and it will like exponentially increase all the way until the wave reaches the surface, because you are summing. So initially you have nothing, then you start getting something, get more and more. So if you have, let's say, so this explains why you have such a long foot. If you go from inside, if you,
the wave comes from the right or from the left.
Yeah, so then
problem because I have a volume that I'm looking.
Yes, and this volume.
You see the long in this direction.
Yeah.
That's the trick. So you.
That's the trick.
When you integrate, you have actually cylinder.
Cylinder, yeah.
You know,
yes.
Say you want to be very confined in this direction. Say on the other hand, there is. For some reason you have measured that or something, you know it's going in by millimeters.
Yeah, so that was a lot of arguments. So this paper was sitting in circles. I don't know how many revisions we got through.
For a voltage measure, is of course that you use a computer program to change the determine the max.
Yeah.
And your maps, obviously.
But this is another issue, how to measure in the ventricles. People want to measure conduction velocity, and if you want to measure conduction velocity, you want to know how is your front oriented, because otherwise you don't know what you measure, because you can. And here you can actually say how the front is oriented. If it's green, this is when it's perpendicular. If it's upstroke is wrong, this in this place you should measure conduction velocity, because it's the front is not oriented right. Yep. Yeah.
But you have this equation for the large. So you have absorption. Which is the influence of the wave in the bottom should be.
Will be smaller.
Yeah, smaller. So.
But the volume is huge. So the. Yeah, but this modeling is, we just take all this into account. So we just plug into the model and see what happens. And this is what happens. It's not just qualitatively. We just took this model as the model that I described, this hybrid model. We plugged everything in and see what happens. And
how about this absorption? So this 2 millimeters. So absorption banks.
For different dyes, it's different. For this dye, it's about 0.8 millimeters for dye for an EPS. This is what we measured carefully. Yep.
There's a huge difference in actually absolute intensity.
Yes, yes, an absolute yes, three orders of magnitude.
Then you actually see the light coming from below and you integrate over that, right? This is what you're saying, it's going like this, right? And there's light coming. A short moment before, there was already light coming from a lower layer. And so you know it's propagating this way. If it's propagating that way, then you only see the light from that very tiny little bit.
Yeah, the maximum intensity is not that different, because in a way, the maximum intensity, everything is excited. In one way or the other, so it's how you reach the maximum intensity. This is... Do you hear me? So the maximum intensity is...
The
So how are we done with this? So this, I think this is this. But for us, it was interesting actually observation, because people studied a lot of electrical upstrokes and the optical upstrokes. They have completely different properties and behave quite differently. So even Kleber wrote an editorial in Sucres regarding this. And actually, that was also very good news, because Salama wouldn't let a single paper publish if you have a long upstroke. He says this something is wrong with your recording, and fortunately, you can go much slower now with cameras. So we have we actually oversample with today's cameras. We can filter comfortably and not worry that we are eliminating our signals. So, but this. Is good. Now transillumination, but this is only subsurface layers. Can you get anything from the depth? And this is important because we want to see filaments, we want to see what's happening inside. So this is the first question we ask. This is the surface, this is the surface of ventricular wall. People who did surgery, they know how it looks. It's very rough. And first we shine the light through and see whether we can see it with the camera. Whether the camera has enough sensitivity, it does have enough sensitivity. You can see this is the transillumination image of the same. Yep.
It depends on how much light you send in. Or the other.
Yeah, but... Yeah, but... Yeah, exactly. So initially, absolutely right. We use huge lamps, like 400 watts. The room was warm, but to get this and the green light doesn't very efficiently penetrate. So now the situation has changed completely, because I'll talk about this later. We have new dyes, red, and the red light is absorbed much less. You can even do it actually with light emitting diode with single 90 milliwatt laser. It's enough to illuminate the whole area and see it through. So this was a big step forward.
What are we looking at here?
So this is the surface of the endocardium snapshot. You see this what scale is about, I would say, 2 centimeters, 2x2. And this is the same image of the same piece, if you image it, if you shine the light from the other side, then you can see all the structure. In a way, we tried to reconstruct thickness. This is MRI, and this is we tried from this, use the theory to reconstruct the actual 3D structures without MRI, but it's a separate story. Now, the question is, but the heart is scattering, can we see if there is an object inside? So this is the first experiment what we did. We put a needle, a capillary at very depth, filled with absorber, and then you can see that even when it's sitting 6 millimeters, deep. So in the this transillumination signal you cannot see much, but if you subtract the background, and fortunately for us you can always do that, you can see something even when the object is quite deep. So that was good things, and this are some voltage sensitive dyes that not that new. They still new, they are not on the market yet, but this absorptive dye JPW1150. So we were able to record quite good signal transillumination with this new dyes, because the first pictures we used standard dyes, but they wash up very rapidly, RH155, that actually you make a recording and you can see how the baseline gradually shifts, then which is no good. So the idea was actually to detect filament was to use the protocol that we used for Bézier reaction, which is, if you, let's say, have a scroll wave, what you do, you average over one rotation cycle, and because near the filament there is nothing happening, so if you average, everything averages out, and you can see the shadow, and the shadow will be the filament. So in the Bézier reaction, you can do it quite well, and this is the filament, elliptical filament. This is the snapshot of a scroll wave, and this is what you get after averaging, and you can see this nice filament. So the question is, can you do it in the heart? And sometimes the answer is, sometimes you can. So what you sometimes you can, and this is what we actually did. So this is the prep. This is the light source, the camera. You shine the light through, initiate arrhythmia. You don't know what you initiate, but then if it's more or less periodic, you can average over one period, and then and hope to see the filament. So,
how do you know it's not just the surface gravity?
Okay, good question. I will get to that. So first, for those who are less familiar with scroll waves, I'll show a single movie. This is what this intramural scroll, I will show an example of this, what this is. So on the surface you have this rotation, it doesn't occur, it occurs inside the tissue. So if you look at the surface, you'll just see breakthroughs, wave propagation, you would never know that there's something is rotating there. So the question now, we show the modeling. So this is that was the Fitzhugh-Nagoma, this is the real one. This is Lo Rudy 2, we are fancy now. So this is the scroll wave. This is it's strongly distorted because of this fiber rotation. And this is what you see on the surface. So something blinking, nothing interesting.
What's the average of
this? That's what I'm showing. This is the average of this. And if you do the average, you can clearly see where the filament is. This is the minimum, and this is the actual location. It's a little shift. It doesn't show exactly where it is, but more or less the good accuracy, 1-2 millimeters. Yep.
This grayscale image is just the surface, or is it integrated to the tissue?
No, this is this is the camera. You take a movie and then you average over a period.
So what would happen if you would just take the surface signal, you have 3 millimeters or 1 millimeter that you had before, and now average?
I don't know. We haven't tried. So this is a transillumination. Usually, these experiments we did with only one camera, but actually, to do this, you need two cameras. One is looking where you illuminate from back, and the other. So. No, we haven't done this. So this another exercise, also theoretical, but here we did a different depth and see how this filament will appear at different depth. And this is 1.8, 3.2, 4.6 millimeters. And of course, if it's very deep, it's very smeared, but you still can see this. But here you see we use the realistic geometry of the endocardium because there was a concern that this will kill everything. So this is regarding Eberhard's question. But you can actually normalize this. I'll show about this. So there is a way to cope with this. So this is finally the real filament. The representative example, the only one we have nice, that's why we never published that, show it only at the meeting. But this shows very nice filament. And this is the shadow of the stimulating electrode. And this was sustained tachycardia. This experiment, luckily we had sustained tachycardia. And then when we stopped tachycardia by shock, as far as I remember. So it disappeared. So that's the answer. It's not a structural thing. It's the real thing. Yes, this was why we didn't continue with these experiments. It's RH 155. It washes out. It's too hydrophilic. It was too pain to work with. And so this is, we had, it's absorptive. It's only absorptive, yep. So we are now redoing everything for fluorescent dyes. So that was a kind of puzzling result. So why it's located like this? And then we start looking into fiber orientation. And one of the interesting things we stumbled into was that the filament like to stabilize the long fibers. We can have argument with Alain because it's interesting. Apparently there are two positions. So if it's not too far from, let's say, if the filament is oriented more or less close to parallel to the surface of the heart, it will can stabilize and feel quite well. It aligns with fibers, move to a layer where it goes along fibers and stays there and rotates like this. But if you have transmural, it will be unstable. It will break and will start producing all these twistons that Alain likes to speak about. And how, what is this transition? Where is the critical angle? Where, how it happens? So that's the challenge for theoreticians.
If I understand you correctly, that you have been able to do this once. It might mean that you haven't seen it the other times, not because your optics doesn't work, but because
the filament,
are wandering around.
So
generalizing and saying they always line up with the fiber.
So what I wanted to say, the model suggests that if you the model, and it's this is the fundamental result. So what you in the model, if you start the filament, so it drifts, finds the layer where it goes along fibers almost, it stops there and stays there. And you can prove this theorem that it will do this no matter what ionic model you use. It's purely geometrical and it's determined exclusively.
It's not true. It depends on, as long as you have a circular core with a model with a circular core which is small.
No. With circular core, I'm talking about linear filament. I am not arguing.
Core, it won't work, which is what.
For circular core, it won't, because for circular.
Circular core, I agree, in certain circumstances. Linear core, it will not into the
to the fibers. That's interesting.
And you have the two effects. When you do the simulations, you will be on a cube. So in a cube, you have the same effects from the boundaries to stabilize to be normal to the boundaries. In a cube, is the same. So once you have a slab, then even if you start with a filament along the muscle fibers, but then meanders, then it's going to stabilize and it's going to go back again.
This is interesting. So we so this is something.
It depends on the boundary conditions and it depends on the meander of the.
Yeah, because if it's meanders, I don't know what we'll do, because for stationary spiral, I understand that this is almost a theorem, if you can prove. I don't want to go into this, but this is, I'll skip this. But then, during this experiment, so once we saw the straight filament very nice, only once. And several times we've seen something that bothered us a lot. So we saw like hooks, strange, like a horseshoe type filaments, so that shouldn't be stable. Why should you see this? Why the filament doesn't straighten up? Why? It's anchored, and what we discovered is that actually this is the geodesic. So that was a nice explanation. Probably we should publish this together, but somehow we didn't do it. But this is the. If you have anchored filament in a medium where you have twisted anisotropy, it will never be a straight line. It would be some helix, a geodesic. Okay. Now, but what I show, transillumination gives you only the projection of the filament, one. So you can see it's there somewhere, but you don't know how deep it is, and you don't know anything about its three-dimensional organization. You can only guess, like I showed this horseshoes. So we guess that it's a helix, it's a part of helix, but in fact we don't know. So we're working on trying to how to extract the depth information, and one of the approaches that we actually came up with, it's called paraxial scanning. And this is the idea of the method. So you scan the image with the beam and record not right above the beam, like it's called coaxial scanning, but you record with the shift. And the main feature of this is that if you have a source, so this is what you will see. After you scan the whole line, this is what you will see. This is a widespread function of this source. But what is important, this maximum of this point spread function is shifted, and this shift is roughly proportional to depth. So if I can actually explain qualitatively why that is, so for two extreme points, is the fine. I think there will be enough light. Let's assume our beam is here and our obstacle is here. And this is our detector. So if our beam is passing the obstacle, this is where we know, where this is when the detector will know that something is happening. So here we have the maximum. If we move away, we see nothing, and we see if we move in this direction, we'll see nothing again, because the beam won't be obstructed by the obstacle. Are you with me? So you see the shift. This is the maximal shift. If your object is here, so you have zero shift, because the real object and the maximum will be at the same location, because you will see it when the where the maximum will be where the object. So in a way, this is where you get the depth dependence.
So why is it like the time delay? Why the shift?
No. It's a pure geometry. It has nothing to do to time. This is method in a way. So let's go with the beam. So we don't see nothing. Let's forget about the second picture. Let's move. So this is my beam. This is my detector. Let's get here. See nothing. Boom. See something.
Just scatters a lot, and then it scatters a lot. It's a bunch of angles.
Yeah. And then see nothing. So I see peak.
Oh, scattering.
Yeah.
You basically, there's a little lamp down there, and that lamp sends out light.
Yeah.
Microscopic or what?
So?
It scatters a lot, sure. Oh, it does.
It does.
On the left side too.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. It's scattered, but you don't see anything. So. You don't see anything.
You could put your detector also on the left side.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what we do. So we do two times, exactly as you said. One time we scan with positive, scan the other negative, and then you get the idea.
It shouldn't matter.
Okay, so okay, so Eberhard got the idea. So now what we get with this approach. Scanning, this is what theory actually gives, so we can reconstruct. Of course, filaments are quite fussy, but this is the tilted one, this is parallel to the surface, this is vortex ring. They're kind of diffuse, but you can get something out of it. And so this is, we're already at some advanced stage, we are testing this using phantom models. So we have this galvos. This is our prep. We scan. We don't move detector. We have a CCD camera, record the whole thing, and then select pixels that we need for our reconstruction. So this is the phantom. This that matches optical property of the heart. It's don't smile. It's not our invention, actually. It's a mixture of hemoglobin, intralipid, and agarose gel. And this all this the guys who do the brain, breast imaging, they all use this kind of. They have all recipes, so you can match any characteristic of many. Because first you have a scatterer, you can control independently scattering coefficient, and then you add absorber dye, and you control absorbing, and so you make the right mixture. You can get. So this is the filament reconstruction in already in the physical model. This is bumpy because during reconstruction we didn't take into account these bumps, and this is what the reconstruction gave. But if you be, want to be fancy, we can solve actually for real geometry and probably get better results, but we haven't done it yet. What is going on here? Okay, and this is more actually impressive thing, is we did reconstruction in the live tissue preparation, not only in the phantom. So what we did, we injected the electrode, plunge electrode, multi-needle electrode, and inside the tissue we used bipolar stimulation, initiated excitation wave inside the tissue. And then, because it's a periodic process, we can pace it and we can move all our... So we have infinite time to do this. I'm not talking that it's very practical yet, but I'll speak about...
how you get the signal.
That's how...
Yeah.
So we move the beam, and then... And because we pace and we make sure that everything is synchronized, and you will see it's more or less synchronous, otherwise we won't get any reasonable image. Yeah. And this is what you see. This is right 2 milliseconds after the stimulus. This 4 milliseconds, you see this blob. 6 milliseconds, blob gets bigger. And this is 8 milliseconds, it's already breaks through onto the surface. So in principle it works, but but now we have a better method and we are going to abandon all this. And what is the weakness of this method is, although we can get something, but you need a very stationary source. Either you have reentry that goes forever, so for example if you have monomorphic tachycardia, then with this technique you can image, but in isolated preparation it's very difficult to get ventricular monomorphic tachycardia. It's maybe Penny will advise us how to do this.
I've never taken the border zone off. You could try to put a border zone up there and see if you can get a stable one.
Yeah, so but this is three-dimensional prep. So we have now a new technique that we are hoping for, that will help us to look at in real time, in real tissue. And this is, we call it alternating transillumination. The idea is the following. So we have two cameras again, we have a prep, but we shine one time on one side and record two images, one in reflection mode and one in transillumination. Then switch the light and do the same pair, similar pair, but with the light on the other side. So then you can do it very rapidly because cameras can go 2000 frames per second. So the whole measurement cycle you can do in one millisecond, which is sufficiently high. So I don't know whether some people already falling asleep. So then I'll try to move faster. So what you can do, this examples of images that you can get with this technique, and this is reflection mode. If the source is close to the surface, you see 10 minus 5. This is if you in transillumination, the signal is much weaker, you see more noise. But what is interesting, first we discovered that actually just by integrating the surface signal, just by integration, you can tell how deep the source is. And the formula is amazingly simple. So this is how you detect the depths of the source. If you have a point source in the tissue, you calculate integrals, and this is delta is the attenuation length, you can tell where the source is. So if you have a focus, ectopic focus, so with this technique you can probably detect it with high degree of accuracy where it is. I'm moving toward the end. So this is actually again simulation. This is the actual position of the source, and this is and the front was expanding, and this is what we could get with the formula, which worked quite well. And this is the most, actually, but this initially we hoped for only to detect the location of the source, and we didn't hope that we can get anything about the shape of the source. But apparently, these four images, if are sufficient, these two pair of images are sufficient to do the full reconstruction. And actually, we just did the inversion, and we get quite remarkably good results. So this is these are four images. You see, put a lot of noise so to imitate the real life, and this is the image of the hollow ellipsoid or hollow expanding front. From this you can never tell. Let's say if you people look at cells, you see more intensity at the edges, less less in the center, but this is not the case in diffusive tomography. So it's not the case. This is the image of hollow ellipsoid. And this is the reconstruction, which for different layers. Actually, this is not the 3D picture, it's just different layers. 2.5 millimeters, 3.5, 4.5, 5.5. So this is the, these are actually real distribution of sources, and you can see that the quality is quite good. So we now actually betting on this technique. We haven't tested it experimentally yet, we just the first paper, theoretical, will be published in JBO, Journal of Biomedical Optics, in June, or maybe it's already appeared, and this is just in the works, so we will start trying this. One technical problem, Eberhard is gone, I want to ask you. One of the technical problems with this method is that when you alternate the light, the intensity changes. The camera doesn't like, actually, very strong intensity changes. So, but there is a hope. Oh, this is another example. Two sources does well too. Oh. Finally,
that is interesting
for everyone, even for people who are not interested in 3D, is the new voltage-sensitive dyes that now we hope will help us to get where we want to be. So this is dye for an apse. This is fluorescent spectrum of dye for an apse. See, the maximum is around 600 nanometers. So these are new dyes. JPW 6003, 6033. So this is, they have the spectrum significantly shifted towards the red. And this is what makes a big difference. Most of them are fluorescent dye. And these are characteristics of this. This is A. They stay in the tissue forever. So this is dye for an apse, washes out, bleaches or whatever. And this dye stays. And this is kinetic of delta F over F. So we paste just hard and see what happens to the signal. And this is dye for an apse. And this is 6003. Several hours you can have. So there is a plateau region where signal doesn't change at all. And this is 6033. As you see, its signal is twice as high as of dye for an apse. And in transillumination, what is amazing for this for alternating transillumination, what is nice, reflection signal in transillumination now comparable, because the red dye penetrates much better. The difference in the signal is much smaller. So this, we hope that this will. We didn't see any actually. What is nice, actually, Guy, we are competing with Guy now. So he is also have a partnership, but he partners with other group of chemists, the Wagoners group in Pittsburgh, and Carnegie Mellon, and I collaborate with Les Law. They made this dye also shifted towards the red. But their dye, as far as what they published so far, it needs pleuroning. It doesn't load well. You need pleuroning. You're not.
Why are you loading this one?
So the first one, you see, the first one we also needed pleuroning. This 6003, and this the second 6033. Surprisingly, we did one modification. It goes loads well exactly like dye four. You don't need any tricks and. And we didn't see any actually deterioration over couple of hours, they are not toxic. At least acutely, they are not toxic. They don't poison. They don't. Yeah, I think they are good.
But, electro measurement on a piece of tissue.
So this is what we are working right now, because this is very new. It's like maybe 3-4 weeks.
Oh.
So.
What about contraction?
So the dye doesn't do anything to contraction, but we remove all this contraction, you know that. So until Stefan Luther won't resolve the issue of motion artifact, or other guys, so we will be using DM. It would be great to have a future without DM, but we need work more. We need work more on that. So this is not done. So this action potentials in different tissues, that doesn't matter. So what is this? It's interesting that this dye, the first dye that you can use in, it's very good for blood perfuse preparation. Actually, we already tested this, because dye for an apps, in order to excite it in dye perfuse preparation, people in Utah, Alexey Zaitsev, he is using a Verdi laser. So you need so much light to get something out of it. So with this dye, because it's the hemoglobin doesn't absorb much at this wavelength already. So you can have, this is our data in blood perfuse preparation, you can have quite decent signals, about 10% in this blood perfuse preparation, which is an achievement, because now more and more experimentalists try to get closer to clinical condition. And then this is good. For excitation, we use laser 650. If you're interested, we can send you a sample. We just sent to Jack. What?
I did ask him 3 months ago.
Oh, I thought that I actually, you can ask some for Jack Rogers. He already got. We sent him even filters, so that he can try. Not only the dye, but all this excitation and fluorescent filters, because we provide full service. So we want to see how it works, and we cannot do in all types of tissues. So thank you for your attention. I'm sorry that... So I showed you once. Experiment. No, I show you 3 experiments.
It was a line, yeah, no, but it needed to be anchored for a long time. So with the new method, what?
With the new method, this is very new. Maybe I shouldn't show that. Okay. But we haven't tested it at all. So for this, you have a rapid. So there is one technical question. Maybe Eberhard will tell us what to do. We have to modulate, because if you shine the light from one side to the other and you do it rapidly, so one frame will be very bright, because it's a reflection, and the other will be dark because you do transillumination. So how to modulate rapidly the aperture of the camera, or somehow what?
2 different cameras.
And you may have two, but still but you should kind of shatter it so that.
Okay.
So we are working on this technical detail, because this will be the main issue, because we have dye.
What do you use as a light source?
As a light source, now we use a laser, 90 milliwatt laser.
You just take like a acoustic modulator and you pick up.
Yeah. So with the light is not a problem with the camera, because camera, if it's looking one time, it's illuminating, the other it's not. So this is the same camera. This is the trick. And if you put 2 cameras, it doesn't help, because still the both of them still.
Why is the? Can you say there's a bleeding?
Because when you see for your measurement cycle, you need one time is bright, the
you
next
change
one.
The settings of the camera.
Every time you can.
So 2 cameras is definitely a quick solution. No, 2 cameras would be a quick solution, right?
But what will happen?
But the one
that is kind of at low sensitivity. I don't worry about that, but that at high, when you get too much light,
your settings of the camera wrong, right? So you would have to switch the settings.
Yeah, you have to switch the settings. So this is what we are working on. This is why. Yeah. So maybe Helen, we will get filament in a practical basis. We'll see what happens inside. But another question that is also has been a huge frustration is that we still cannot initiate filaments in 3D in a controllable way, and this is why actually we don't publish much about filaments. We have many examples where we could do something, but mostly these are anecdotal examples, because in a controllable way it's very hard to do. And one of the
just a comment. There's a bigger photometric camera that has sets of amplifiers. I don't know how fast you can switch between them, but they're
So maybe we have to just. Yeah, because our bets will be on this technique, because with scanning we will always be limited with periodic and stationary processes. So then, if you need just four images, then you are all set. And for
another question. So when you use this diffusion equation for the photon flux, assume that the medium is isotropic, and then later on you showing the picture showing.
Okay, I understand the question. Electrically it's highly anisotropic, but optically it is, surprisingly, it's isotropic. No. So we did experiments, actually. We measured attenuation lens. This was what we did with Weitz. So now our partners, they know how to measure all this anisotropy, and they told us that they measured carefully it's isotropic, and that was a surprise, because...
So the features that we saw were actually surface features, were thickness features.
Thickness features, yeah.
These were not features in the...
No. Features of non-uniform thickness.
Thickness, which is a boundary condition.
Boundary conditions, yeah. In this case, you have to solve... You cannot do this. Green's function is much more complicated. You have to solve the diffusion equation directly in that. Yeah, in that geometry. Yeah, this is what actually we did.
You need to calculate the absorption coefficient. You have to estimate the flux, given that you know the absorption coefficients, for instance.
Yeah, but this is what you have to measure. For each die, you have to do all these measurements. No, for each prepper, it's why each prep would be? No, that absorption coefficient. No, this is a constant, tissue constant. But
I mean, the one thing that we've seen is that the dye doesn't get necessarily homogeneously.
Oh, this is.
Stefan uses to the work.
Okay, so with this.
Right, how you get it
how
in there?
How would you get that in there?
So that it's homogeneous.
So we had this question before, and we actually about this what this heterogeneity in dye distribution, what they do. So the situation is surprisingly not that bad as it may seem. So you can normalize, because what we know, and it won't be 100%, but the action potential is kind of well preserved quantity. It's not can be anything. So you cannot have a microvolt action potential in 5 millivolts. It will be 100, maybe 90, maybe 80. So the amplitude is more or less. So if you normalize to your signal to local background fluorescence, you can even out significant. At least this is what the simulation show. And we actually, all this heterogeneity, you can get rid of them and still get reasonable results. So this is the answer about to this local. Of course, there are slow heterogeneities. And this, it's and so you have, anyway, you don't have.
No,
it's a non-uniformity in thickness, and if you do everything and you do your reconstruction in a rectangular slab geometry, so you may have big errors. So eventually you have to do
Basically, you could, in some sense, you could take, you know, some computer scanning tomography.
Yeah, this is what the,
You should first see where the...
Exactly, this is exactly...
And then you do the experiment...
Absolutely right, this is exactly what we do. So now we do MRI, but we do MRI after. First you do optical mapping, do all the measurements. And then we do MRI, and then we do the... And then retroactively we'll see what we had.
Otherwise, 15 minutes break.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.